You're listening to CPC Together, a podcast produced by Central Peninsula Church in the San Francisco Bay Area, where we talk about pretty much everything.
And so we are on episode 53. Our app, this will be episode 53.
Let's see.
Episode 52.
This is number 53, Brandon. Get with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Wait till we get to episode 654 or something.
Oh,
like that.
Gosh. That's a lot.
Wow.
Okay, what I was going to ask you guys, we're in the room here with Sandy, Kevin, Rachel, and Brandy.
The dream team.
Yeah, this is a full room. And I'm curious, I know a lot about all of you, but I want to hear something that I don't know about you.
Ooh. I am so bad at this question.
I hate
really?
This question.
I'm so bad at this question.
I
know,
too. Because I don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. I recycle answers for this one, but it's hard if you've known the person long enough.
Yeah, you can't
enough.
Say in the same room, though.
Well, we already know your name is Chili Beef.
Chili Beef.
Which is probably one of your recycled answers.
That kicks people with soccer balls in the hallway.
Oh. Yeah.
But here's my thing you don't know about me.
Okay.
When I was in kindergarten.
Kindergarten, Kevin.
And first grade. It was back to back. I played such a convincing troll in, what's the name? That's the play where you cross the bridge with the troll.
Oh, what is it?
No, oh man, the story's falling apart quickly. What is it?
Sharks,
Big Bad Wolf.
Sharks and Minnows?
Isn't there like a troll in the Big Bad Wolf? Isn't there something like that?
Little Red Riding Hood?
Yeah, isn't there a troll in that?
I thought it was
I looked
wolf.
Up, cross the bridge with the toll, and it said Golden Gate Bridge.
He said troll, not toll.
Yeah, troll.
Oh, I troll. The Three Billy Goats.
The Gruff. Three Billy Goats Gruff, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
I was the troll in the Three Billy Goats Gruff. In our elementary school play, and I did so good, they invited me back to do it as a first grader as well.
Wow.
Two years in a row.
That's impressive.
I played the troll.
That's the extent
of my acting career.
I don't remember that story, but for some reason in my head, I'm remembering that it's kind of dark.
I mean, I don't. I'll be honest, I can't remember a thing.
Is their last name Gruff?
It said, a mean and hungry troll lives under a bridge. He's hungry for a meal and would love to snatch and eat...
Children?
Any goat attempting to cross his bridge.
Goat.
His bridge.
Yeah.
It's your bridge.
That's my bridge. Don't cross my bridge.
That's typecasting.
Wow. I got troll vibes is what you're saying. Like I just naturally a troll.
You shall know it pass. Anyway,
now you know. The more you know.
By the way, Katie just found out that Costco Business Center sells. Have you ever been to the Costco Business Center?
I've only been there once.
It's the one up in South City.
They sell whole goats.
No.
And Katie's like, I want to buy a goat. But I mean, it's a dead goat.
As business?
It's like for
restaurants. You're not going to use that for personal use.
Oh.
You don't have a personal goat. It's your business goat.
That's fascinating.
What do you use goat meat for?
Oh, I guess you said like a restaurant, maybe.
Yeah, goat's milk. But you're not getting milk.
But wait, it's dead.
Dead. Yeah. It's just powder
What's
now.
The goat for?
Oh, man. It's just powder now? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Is that what happens? I don't know.
Do you think that's what goat milk is?
No,
after
like
they
when
die. What happens to the
milk?
I think
that like goat milk is like powdered goat that you mix with water?
No, like once it dies, it's just dry. I don't know.
Just add water?
Yeah.
Sometimes I imagine people listening to these conversations, like driving down the road, like, I'm going to listen to my church's podcast.
Oh, gosh. So that's it? Just me? Nobody else is going? Is just find out?
What Sandy, else? You don't have anything, Sandy? I know everything about you.
No, you don't. I'll go back to
that was said with such conviction. Nah, you don't. Yeah.
I'll go to elementary school too.
Nice.
I was so shy and quiet in the second grade that my teachers didn't think I knew how to talk.
Oh. Wow.
So they sent me to speech therapy school.
Yeah.
That was offered in the school, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I came home one day and my mom said, how was school? I said, well, it was kind of different today. I had to go to speech therapy. And she's like, well, why did you have to go to speech therapy? I go, I don't know.
Oh, no.
And so my mom calls the teacher, and she's all, I've never heard your daughter talk, so I didn't think she knew how to talk.
I assume she couldn't.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yes.
Like, that's no, good. I'm just shy.
Just shy.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That is a good one. Chili beef?
I wrote High School Musical 2. Not the one that gets shown, though. A different version.
Oh.
I was like... And you're no, still working here. Like,
wow.
I'm impressed.
No.
I'm going to need more context.
My cousin and I used to write our own sequels to movies and then act them out and then fight over who got to be the main character and tell who got me, to sing the main songs.
Tell me you still have some written somewhere.
My cousin sent me the script.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
We need to do a live reading on the podcast of that. We need to read that script. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh. We'll all pick different characters.
It's dramatic.
It's. I bet it is.
Yeah. That's there's a lot of good stuff.
A budding Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, right, yeah. Here.
That's good.
Lin-Manuel Almeida. Almost said Almeida again.
Almeida. Miss Alameda.
Brandy? No. You were about to skip right over this. You did not get over this.
I don't... I could...
You were revving up. You were ready.
I was ready to move on. You guys had such good ones. All I can think of is powdered goat milk. Two nights ago, I was in bed before 9.
Wow.
Ooh.
I have not gone to bed before 9 in a very long time.
I know it's bad like when Katie comes in time. And she's like, really? Already going to sleep?
Is she a night owl?
Yeah. Well, she has a harder time sleeping than me.
Mm.
One time we timed my how fast I can fall asleep. We were going to...
I'm guessing she timed it, not you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more of a one-way.
I was driving.
Yeah. I'm almost there.
While you were driving?
Not there yet.
We were cal training, and I was like, just see how fast I can go to sleep. Like, cause she can apparently tell when like my breathing changes and I'm really asleep. It was 2 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah. And she has a hard time falling asleep, so...
And she just gets angry, huh?
Yeah.
It's like, it's so mad. Lindsay's the same. I fall asleep like that, too. But
Is that one? That I fall asleep fast? That's good.
That works.
That works.
It's okay.
Tell us something from your Iowa days.
Oh, my gosh.
More Iowa passion stories.
I had a friend. I hope he's listening right now. His name is Robert Oler. I was not very popular. Robert was my only friend. And he lived on a pig farm.
Ooh.
And so we had a project, and for the life of me, I can't remember what project it was.
Didn't matter. You had a friend.
What we did was we went into his corn silo, and we filmed ourselves singing Garth Brooks' "The Thunder Rolls."
Aww.
In the corn silo.
Iowa.
We thought it would be so cool.
Why did you have to do it in the corn silo?
We wanted to. We didn't have to.
Wasn't the acoustics or anything.
It was like, this will be great. It'll sound like Rolling Thunder when we sing in here.
And wow. Was there corn like in there? Thunder?
No, it was really bad. The corn was not in there, no. You can't go in a silo when the corn's in
there. I feel like that would not be safe.
I wasn't sure if he was like standing on top of the
That's
corn.
That's what I was thinking. And you're like sinking sand or something.
No, it was before harvest. Yeah.
Okay. Just on the cobs. Singing.
I'm going to have to tighten this.
Tighten this intro.
Wow. I'm going to have to tighten this intro. Sandy's like, are we ever going to talk
with
about
four of us in here? We got some.
I know. When you ask a question for four people to talk.
Sandy, I just have to say, you nailed it.
No, thank you.
Great message. The foot of the mountain is where God shapes our faith. Was that your big idea?
That was the big idea. You got it.
Boom.
Yeah.
That's a sign of a good sermon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When you can replicate
I never
that.
Remember Kevin's bottom line.
You know, it's
something, something, Greek word, something, something.
It's a communication pastor in me. Less is more.
Yeah.
That's the rule of thumb. Yeah. Less is more.
You know, I feel like this idea of the foot of the mountain is where God shapes our faith is not, it's not how most of us live our spiritual life. I feel like most of us go from, it's almost like we try to chase those mountaintop experiences.
Would you say, Brandon, that we shouldn't chase mountaintops or waterfalls?
Thank you. You knew TLC. I was gonna make
that joke. Don't go chasing mountaintops. Do you know that reference, Rach?
I do.
You know TLC?
I do.
Yeah, so it seems like a lot of times we go from mountaintop to mountaintop. So, Sandy, what would you say is kind of like the problem with that?
I think that it's more for the feeling. You're chasing that feeling. And I don't want to like be down on mountaintop experiences because God does amazing things in our lives at those times. And in youth ministry, student ministry world, sometimes those are markers of our faith, you know. But to chase them for the fear, for the mere fact of a feeling, I feel that's where we go.
Yeah,
we want that feeling, that closeness, and we can have that every day in our life, but. In my experience, God's shaping my faith in the everyday.
No.
It's rubbing shoulders with people. It's the hard stuff in life. Those are the places where.
Yeah. It God's also shaping. Like, I think if you lean on the mountaintop experiences for our spiritual formation, it cuts you out of the process,
yeah.
Right? Because then you assume that God is the only one, like, cause the Mount of Transfiguration, like it wasn't like, Peter manufactured that and made it happen.
Right.
God chose a unique manifestation of his presence in that time. And I think often we look at and we kind of say that's how we're formed. But as you just said, like so much of life is ordinary. Like I heard one author talk about just there's so much of life that's just maintenance.
Yeah.
Of just keeping life going. And if we don't think God is in those moments to shape our faith, like at the foot of the mountain, which mm-hmm. I just loved that imagery, then we cut God out of the majority of our life
right. And
don't think that God couldn't use those mundane or boring things to shape and form us just as well as the mountaintop. It's a both and, but I think we need to bias towards the foot of the mountain, not the top of the mountain.
This makes me think of... you know, like I grew up going to camps and all that kind of stuff. And I had a good amount of friends that also went into ministry. And I know that a lot of them went into ministry initially because they wanted to keep that that thing going that they had. Whenever they were doing ministry stuff, life was like good and they were on that spiritual high.
Yeah.
And anyone who's been in full-time ministry for any length of time.
Right.
Like, squelches that quick.
Yeah, it changes. I mean, like you don't live every day. I mean, I think people like imagine, like I remember the podcast, Kevin, where you and I described our day and like, you know, we come in and we just, you know, I just sing worship songs all day.
Floating on air, yeah.
And you just walk around praying for everybody and it's like, man, I would love to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I would too. That'd be great.
That's not really the reality. Rachel, you're the newest to like kind of full-time vocational ministry. Did you experience any of that, like when you started working for a church?
I feel like I did, and I got more used to the mountaintops than the, maybe not necessarily just in the church, but ministry in general. I got more used to the mountaintops that when I got to the foot of the mountain, I didn't know what to do with those, or I thought those weren't just as important much ministry, too. And then so much of that is like putting identity, I think, in ministry that's in the mountaintop. So then when it's those low moments, like I can't depend on myself anymore, which was part of the problem in itself, but I got used to the mountaintops more than the valleys.
And that comes from somewhere. Like I think we live in a world that forms us to assume the big, the viral, the all those kind of moments are where life, like the good life, is found. I mean, that's again like in I think one of the reasons you can't sustain like the mountaintop experience is it's kind of like if you sought out, I'm not very active on social media. But it's like, if you sought out to make a viral video, that's like the worst way to make a viral video. You know what I mean? Like you can't manufacture it. And I think sometimes we think of the spiritual life in that way. If I'm going to go manufacture that. And there's a difference, I think, between that versus like an expectancy of God to move. But again, I think it's, we have to get comfortable with when the disciples come down that mountain, like there's an expectancy that God can still move there. and not just, you know, up on the Mount of Transfiguration. Mm-hmm. So,
and Sandy, I mean, you're almost saying that in some cases, like, and I would definitely in my life resonate with this, the foot of the mountain is a higher degree of transformation.
I would say, yeah. I would say it is.
Because you're having to kind of slog through, and that's when you're having to rely on God. Did you just, like, ruin your whole...
I just spilled water.
No.
Kevin's little, his little journal.
I just dumped water everywhere.
We're good.
And his already illegible journal is now really illegible.
Wow.
Any notes I had on your sermon, Sandy, are a little blurry. It's okay. I'm a nerd and I already have my new one ready for me in my office.
Good for you.
So it's ready to go.
Sorry.
I would like to talk about this word unbelief. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but you know, this whole scene with Jesus and, you know, healing the boy and the boy's father and the crowd and the disciples, and Jesus is kind of looking at all the different unbelief, and Sandy, you described it well, that Jesus was, he was kind of like, what, frustrated, would you say? Or he was...
Yeah, well, I like how Kevin says it. It's kind of, it's almost like it's the Jesus rolls his eyes moment.
Yeah.
It's like, here we go again. Yeah. It's like, really? Come on. You know, I don't think he's using it that tone of voice that I just said. but I think he's like, how long? What is it really going to take for you to believe?
Yeah.
I mean, I am guessing the crowd had seen Jesus perform miracles before, and they're there to see another one happen. You know, that to me is kind of a weird, it's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Kevin, you were talking about this word unbelief, and you had kind of a
nerdy, excursus for it. Yeah. So the word, almost any time you read the word belief or faith, it's the same Greek word, and the word is pistuo. And there's a lot of like scholarly debate on how we should render that word, which is strange for a word as essential to our faith as faith. And the debate plays out really around I think a better understanding of it, but it's so clunky in English they don't use it, is something like faithfulness rather than faith as a static thing. And again, there's way more nuance to this conversation than I can provide, but it has that idea of like faithfulness, or the word I often use is allegiance, because I think that's what we're getting after when we think of like, put your, you know, do you believe, or you unbelieving generation, as Jesus says in this passage. It seems to make more sense when we think of the context of like faithfulness or allegiance, and thinking, you know, when you look at these crowds that have been following Jesus, the Pharisees who are anticipating a Messiah, but yet they refuse to believe or put their allegiance in Jesus as the Messiah, the one that had been spoken about. And so I think when we get to, you know, when we think about Jesus' lament over our unbelief or his concern over that, I think it changes the nuance to think through that lens of like faithfulness. I think it's both maybe a little bit more gracious to understand, you know, that sort of like Peter, you know, Eugene Peterson's phrase, a long obedience in the same direction. That feels more like what God is calling us to than a sort of static, did I check off the intellectual box where I've ascended to some sort of like doctrine and now I believe it. Like that's, I think the tie in, actually, we'll talk about this a little bit on Sunday, the tie between orthodoxy, right, belief, and orthopraxy, right, practice or living. And that idea of pistuo holds both of those. Like they're two sides of the same coin. It is both Jesus as truth, but also Jesus as the way. And those two things have to kind of stay wed together. And so the way of life and the way of believing, and both of those things kind of comprise this idea of faith or belief.
That I think that helps, because I think sometimes when we're made aware of our unbelief, there can be a shame in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like in Sandy, I think you talked about that so well, you know, like, especially when you're talking about your experience with students who are doubting, you know, and there can be this kind of like, oh, well, if you doubt, then, you know, God doesn't love you anymore or something.
I think in the Christian culture, in all our Christian things we do, we don't, doubt is kind of poo-pooed upon, you know? Yeah. And the reality is, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be something that's judged by other people. And I said it in the sermon. If someone who's a believer says they've never doubted, they're lying.
Yeah, that's so
they're,
good.
They're lying. Yeah. So let's just be authentic with one another.
Mm. Yeah.
So we can spur each other on in our faith.
Yeah. Because you can still hold doubt and allegiance in tension.
Yeah, you can.
Right? Like I can doubt that someone has my best interest in mind, but still hold an allegiance to say, but I'm gonna see it through. Like I don't have it all figured out. I don't have all the answers, but I'm gonna trust. I'm gonna put my faith in them and see where that takes us. Right? Like you can hold those intention. Where I think when we have a static understanding of belief as something you either possess or don't possess, like that's such like it's so rigid. And I don't think it takes into consideration like the realities of life where it's like none of us are like fully 100% there, fully 100% against it. But in that kind of that nuance, like you said, I think it was just so spot on that all of us at several points in our life wrestle with the doubt, like pastor or non-pastor.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like we have it figured out. There's always that there's that tinge of that. Well, and that's think, that's the world we live in, too. Like that's the secular world we live in. We're born with a bias towards doubt. And that's new kind of historically, but that's in us and that's okay. You know, we live in that tension.
But I do think you hit it with shame.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a very shame centered Christian culture. Mm. And so all around legalism, all around performance and what it should look like.
Mm.
And so to confess unbelief would be what you just said would be a very shameful thing. And it really wasn't until I got to PBC and learned the whole idea of the new covenant that and grace and authenticity that like just rocked my world and changed my faith in so many ways.
Yeah.
So
it's one of my favorite moments post, you know, as we're getting closer to Easter, and I think of Jesus resurrected with, you know, he's in the upper room with the disciples, all but Thomas had seen him. Mm-hmm. And I love what, you know, Thomas in such honesty, like he gets such a bad rap for saying, like, I got to touch your hands. Like until I touch the wounds, I won't believe. But I think part of that is like, he wanted a genuine encounter, an experience with the resurrected Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I think that for so many of us, that's our experience and that's okay. Yeah. Like it doesn't mean he was wrong. And I love that context of trying to say, it's not a shameful thing. It's saying, I want to encounter, I want to experience, you know, and I think we have to think of it, you know, be interested what you guys think of it being more of a phase than it is a place to live. You know, I don't think we can live like forever in doubt. Mm-hmm. Like there's a sense in which I think God brings us through phases of that, seasons of that, where we wrestle with it. But my experience when I've experienced those moments, they're not forever. They can feel like it in the time. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, I think the church has to be careful not to bring that shame.
Yeah.
But understand that it's a transitional kind of phase or whatnot.
But I mean, if you put that next to this idea of unbelief being a lack of allegiance, I feel like it does take the shame out of it. And when it comes to like a lack of allegiance and confronting our unbelief, I feel like that's the healthiest thing in the world, to look yourself in the mirror and say, this is where my allegiance is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like maybe one of the problems is that we don't do that enough.
Yeah.
We don't say, what am I really aligned with? And and Jesus can see right through it. He in some ways, it feels like your allegiance uncovers what you really believe.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of a distinction between doubt and unbelief, which I think is important to nuance those things.
Yeah.
Unbelief meaning like I don't put my allegiance with Jesus. Like that's a little more, I think that can be a little more clear cut of like either you claim him as Lord or you don't, right? Yeah. Like there's not necessarily like, like to say he's kind of Lord, just over this, like that's not really him being Lord. But doubt is something different where again, you can place that full allegiance, but doubt is a little more like, but is he a good Lord? You know, like that's a fair question. Mm-hmm. And I think that I love that the way I think that you're calling us to that moment of conviction to say, okay, I have to ask the hard question, where is my allegiance? And it's maybe you're doubting if your allegiance is in the Lord. I think that works, but I think there is that nuance between doubt and unbelief. Maybe we're splitting hairs, but I think there is a distinction between
I think there should be.
Yeah.
And so God doesn't leave us stuck in that unbelief if we are at a place where we're there. Based on this story, and you brought out the nuance of this story where the father says, ask Jesus to help us.
Us.
Explain a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, it was kind of, every time you like study for a passage like this, something new pops out. Mm. And, you know, as I looked at this passage again, because I've taught this passage a bunch of times in student ministries through the years, and I was like, I've never noticed that us piece. Mm. And it kind of like slapped me upside the head for a little bit and really got me thinking, you know, about the father, about being a parent and what, you know, a parent wants to protect their child. Mm. They want the best for their child. They don't want to see their child hurting. And yet you've got this demon that has possessed this child who is out to kill this child at times. And
throws him in the fire.
And this father is doing the best that he can under the circumstances. And I just was like, help us. He needs just as much healing from all the pain that he has seen his son go through. And obviously I'm not a parent, but two of you in this room are, you know, and that's why I really wanted, in my sermon for people to go, let me think about this story as a parent.
Yeah.
If this was my child, how would I be as a parent in the sense of how would this affect me?
Yeah. It almost creates space for the why question. Like I imagine this father's like, why my kid?
Yeah.
Why this, right? Like, and that's that I believe, but help me with my unbelief. And like, there's areas where I'm not sure. And I thought when you brought that out, I also hadn't noticed the us there, which is, I think, the heart of a parent, right? Yeah. Is this isn't just like to have something afflict my child afflicts me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, those are so interwoven. And I would just imagine this guy had been asking like, why God? Yeah. Why this? Why is my child being, you know, haunted by that? And I think that it creates space for that because I don't think God's scared away by that question.
No.
We probably won't ever have a satisfactory answer to it.
Probably not.
but I think it's healthy to express that. Yeah. I mean, that's just littered throughout the Psalms, right? Of just raw emotion. Like, God, why is this happening? So
Job didn't get a very helpful answer.
No, yeah. He didn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you there when I created?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So why couldn't the disciples heal the boy? Like you kind of mentioned, you know, the lack of prayer. Like, what was the basics of that?
I really boiled it down to they knew the words to say and the prayers to pray. They knew the motions. They could go through
the
motions.
They had the formula.
They had the formula. And when it didn't happen, I think they were shocked. I think they didn't. I mean, obviously, they were shocked because towards the end of the passage, they asked Jesus, why couldn't we do this? And Jesus is pretty clear. You know, we're watching these disciples, you know, as Kevin and Dan have pointed out through these first nine chapters, basically, that they're still not getting it. They're still not understanding it. And granted, we have the whole picture. So I can't be too hard on the disciples because if I was there, I would probably be doing the same thing, you know? So I there's this piece of, you know, well, I know the right thing to say and the right prayer to pray, and let's do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the disciples were.
You had a great little turn of phrase where you said, prayerlessness is powerlessness. Mm. And I thought that was such a good line and a reminder, I think, of the importance of prayer mm-hmm. and how much I know I have like just historically wrestled with what the heck is prayer? Like what yeah. is happening in prayer?
Yeah.
And I think God's been, even in just the past few years, opening my heart more and more to that. Mm-hmm. There's power in prayer. And mm-hmm. I don't even know exactly what all of that still looks like, but I think this was a great example. And I just loved that little turn of phrase of like, prayerlessness is powerlessness. And I think you see that so clear here.
Yeah.
In our community group this week, we were talking through the questions. I think you had highlighted two different people, the doubter and the self-reliant. Mm. And one of the questions really stuck with us for a while. It was, have you been conditioned over the years to appear God-reliant when you're actually very self-reliant? Mm. Which is Ouchie. Hard that you're externally saying the right words or doing the right things, going through the motions, but it's a external when it's well, a way of reliant on ourselves.
I have to leave now.
I think it's so hard because as we've been talking about the things that shape us,
yeah.
I mean, our culture teaches us to be independent yeah. thinkers, yeah. independent, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We are
mm-hmm.
raised to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
And that shapes us
yeah.
in such a deep way
yeah.
that to try to be dependent on God.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
That that'll rock your world yeah. in a yeah. society that teaches you to be independent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for so much, I think like when I look in this room, like literally the four of us in full-time ministry, there's such a temptation. Like when you described that, like to have we been trained to appear mm-hmm. reliant on God versus, you know, when we're really self-reliant. Like ministry, like we're probably as guilty as anyone mm-hmm. listening in on this, just because ministry has that allure where it's, we have to present like we are trusting God fully
mm-hmm.
yeah. when I think so often, you know, we can succumb to those sorts of traps where we get caught in going through the motions because it's tied up in our job and our career right. and all these sorts of things. But yeah, that's a tough question. The difference between appearing reliant on God versus first relying on God.
Yeah, I mean, if you just compare, which is always hard to do, but if you compare your prayer life with Jesus's prayer life, I mean, like you said, Sandy, like he was just always,
yeah,
he didn't pray for the boy in that very moment, no. which is, you know, a little odd that he would say, oh, you need to pray more. But Jesus has always praying.
Yeah.
He steeped everything he did in connection with the Father. Like he was not at any point independent of the Father.
Yeah.
He was always dependent on the Father.
Yeah, what you see me do, you watch the Father do. If you know me, you know the Father. Like that union, that intimate connection. It calls into question what prayer is even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have probably a fairly narrow view of what prayer is, that Jesus was operating out of a different kind of prayer.
So how do we battle against that independence? Like, not even as ministers. Let's talk about everyone who's listening to this that maybe is not in vocational full-time ministry, but just, you know, we have this tendency to do things in our own power and our own strength. Like how do we what do we do? What's the is there something that we can do to sort of try to keep us more anchored and connected?
I feel like part of it is naming it, like naming when we're relying on ourselves.
I was going to say that too, Rach.
Yeah, because it's like it's easier to keep going through the motions and to have that like external front, but when you're naming, when you're really relying on yourself, it kind of forces you to confront it a little more, and it's almost like a plea for help, like just like the man said, I believe, but help me in my unbelief.
Yeah.
Like we're naming where our allegiance lies, but also where we're putting our trust in ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say the second thing, I think this is why we can't do this Christian thing on our own, is we can't always see our unhealthy attachments or allegiances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like you need people close enough to you to call you out when your life's inconsistent with what your stated words are. You know, because again, we can fall into that trap so easily to assume or project a vision of who we are and what we believe. And yet we often can't see the inconsistencies in how we're actually living, like in accordance with those things. And as you said earlier, Brandon, like in many ways are the way we live actually projects our beliefs, like not what we verbally say, write on a doctrinal statement, like those sorts of things. Like ultimately, if I want to know what you believe, I'm probably going to observe your life for a while. And that will then demonstrate how we live.
Oh yeah. Like have someone ask your kids.
Yeah.
Hey, what's most important to your daddy?
Yeah.
Like, then you're going to get a really honest answer.
Yeah. Because
they see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They know what's most important.
Man. How do you think they'd answer, Brandon? I'm just kidding.
I don't know.
They'd be terrified.
Let's do homework.
We ask our kids.
Yeah.
That's why Maddie wants to come on the podcast. We should have her on.
We should have Maddie on the podcast.
That'd be so fun.
We'll do it when we're in the Sabbath series. Awesome. Have her talk about Sabbath.
That'd be good.
Be super fun.
I think just to piggyback on both of what you and Kevin, Rachel and Kevin have said, I just think if we can strive to be authentic with one another and not be fearful in our faith and what people think about our faith or think about ourselves.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm not explaining this very well, but I think there's a piece of authenticity and it comes back to community. It comes back to naming, you know what, I am an independent person. Right. So I just, there's a piece of authenticity that I think, and the Father comes out and says it with us, you know?
Yeah. And even more, is there a more beautiful, honest prayer than Lord, I believe, but help me with my unbelief. And that is an authentic moment where he's like, Jesus, I'm somewhere in between. I don't know, but would you help me with that? Like that's a beautiful spot to be.
And sometimes getting to the end of ourselves is so freeing. Because I was meeting with someone this week, and I feel like it's something I've been thinking about, talking about for a while, but just how much like being seen matters to me. And before I thought it was like being seen in all the good things or like recognized or acknowledged, but I think being seen in like the messy parts too and how freeing that is of like, no, I'm not perfect, or no, there are places where there are struggles, because then it's so much more freeing, I think, to live with that vulnerability than to kind of have to keep going through the motions. It's like God doesn't expect us to just do Christian things or do the things of
following
Him.
You don't
have
to play the game anymore. That's good.
Yeah.
That makes me think of
really good.
That makes me think of growing up in the conservative church that I grew up in. The only time you ever heard anybody speak like something, you know, negative that they did, or like really like own something bad, was before they were a Christian.
Interesting.
Well, before I was a believer, I blah 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 blah, and I remember thinking as a kid, like, what if you are?
What if it's happening?
Are a believer?
It's so true.
I was actually thinking through with this idea of how do we, you know, stay dependent on the Father and always be checking our allegiances is. What we're embarking on as a church is an attempt to make more time to stay connected to the Father. It's not like, you know, at the very beginning of this, I've talked about this a couple times now with you guys, but, you know, if you want to build like a big, exciting movement, start with ambition towards accomplishing a big, you know.
A swear word.
Kevin doesn't like
ambition.
The word ambition
is Kevin's swear word.
But you know, say, hey, we're
gonna have another podcast series on that.
Ambition, efficiency.
Yeah.
Busy.
100%.
But you start and say, this is how we're gonna transform the community, or this is, you know, here's our big mountain we're gonna tackle. And starting with something like attentiveness, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the first three habits we're starting with.
Yeah.
Silent solitude, Sabbath, and what will come in the fall, fasting, are all three things of negation. Like, stop doing things. None of it is actually go do something more. We actually need to stop doing things. But
really what it is you're helping us, and we're doing, like you said, we're doing it together to develop these keystone habits that help us keep connected. Habits that have been part of the church
yeah.
for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah. yeah.
I think what gets me is, you know, we see Jesus going for silence and solitude and going off to pray. But we never hear about, like, the disciples going with him, except for in the garden.
Yeah, they fall asleep a few times.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
Jesus right. off. He comes back, check on them. They're just out. Right. Yeah, they're asleep.
But so I've always this has always been a question for me. It's like, yeah. were the, I know the disciples saw that, but did they ever go with him?
Yeah. I think there were. I think there are times when it was they were retreating away to the Eremos. Like, let's get away. So they hop together. On the boat. Let's head to the other side.
Well, the transfiguration kind of was probably.
Yeah, that's a moment. Yeah, true. Where he's drawn three away and retreating kind of in those moments.
Yeah.
Yeah. There, I think there is some of that. Yeah, but I think we have to find, again, and that's why we're focused on these sorts of habits and initiatives, is our life just moves so quick that we don't even have the opportunity to take stock of where our allegiance is, because it's just go, go, go.
Yeah.
And I know as I, like, this past couple weeks have been a little heavier for me than normal. And so I just feel like I've been, like, just pounded by meeting after meeting, and just, like, my mind has been racing. And so, like, even last night, to be honest, it was the first time in a while, a few days, I'd really had some, like, time to have some silence. Mm. And I found myself, one, I had to really fight to not put a show on, which was, like, my gut, which I think I had done also to fill the gaps. But I finally won that battle, at least for last night. And I remember just sitting there, and I couldn't even bring my Bible out. Mm. I just sat, and I just allowed myself to be in the presence of God and just come to that place of prayer. And I think so much of the prayer was, you know, I wasn't as articulate as the Father, but so much of that posture was, God, I believe, but man, there's things going on I don't know how to handle. I don't know what to do. And until we cultivate, like, we have to just be attentive to God, each other, our souls, all of that. And all of that happens on a Wednesday night in between doing dishes and laundry, like in the very foot of the mountain.
Yep.
And I would say that was a more formative moment for me than some of the mountaintop experiences that take place too. So,
you know, Jesus modeled that.
Yeah.
To bring this kind of full circle.
Yeah.
The mountaintop moments are his healings, you know, his miracles.
Yeah. Right.
You know, turning water into wine and all that kind of stuff. But where the life change, you know, where his connectedness happened, the source of all of his power is in those moments that we don't really ever saw. It just kind of says he went away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. We're formed at the foot of the mountain. Mm. It's a good phrase.
Should write a song about that.
Sounds like a country song.
There is a song. I almost had you pull out Stephen Curtis Chapman's song, The Mountain.
Stevie Curtis Chapman.
It's an oldie.
Did you say Stevie?
Mount up your horses. We got a trail. Isn't that Stephen Curtis Chapman? I call him Stevie.
That is Stephen Curtis Chapman.